I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Richard, I feel like I used to do nothing in my life. God, I miss it. God, I miss doing nothing, you know? I made some kind of like string of commitments and decisions and took new opportunities in my life, all of which, if I was in a better mood right now, I'd be like, these are great things, character building, but not only character, some of them are just good things.
Yeah, right. So you're saying that your full-time job you started today and your partner that you soft launch on the Discord are inconveniences to you?
No, I would never say that about either of those very tender, important things in my life.
That are dangling by a thread as we speak.
No, I don't know. I'm trying to look for an apartment, right? I don't know if I've hard launched that into the world yet. I'm trying to look for an apartment. I have this vision of a high-rise city apartment where I can look out at the view of the city that I guess I love, and like that inspires me. Like views inspire me. So sue me. I'm inspired by a city view. You know, like whatever. And I've been on this search now for a number of months, and it's turned up very little in the way of like remotely
views.
And it's got, you know, you go, okay, here's what I want. And then you go, all right, maybe this isn't feasible at the moment.
Yeah.
Let's compromise on this. Like maybe I go for a place that has an upstairs room, but is like a ground floor place, et cetera, et cetera. And then you find yourself in a part of town you don't want to live in a boring house with nothing to look at out the window, going, why am I here? What am I doing here?
Because you've been keeping me updated, whether I like it or not, on this journey you've been on. And it's like, it's been interesting because you're not sending me pictures of any of the flats. You're just going, checking out a flat today, I'm here, I hate it, I'm leaving. And it's like, you're not someone that I know to have very high standards when it comes to these things. So I'm wondering just how bad these flats can be.
I have always had.
You've always had like a dream flat in mind.
This is going to be a very interesting thing to unpack 2 minutes into our our episode of Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cop Pop podcast.
We're covering the Rio duology.
Yeah, we'll get to those, whatever they are, in half a second. I just want to finish this thought because it's therapeutic for me. I reject but understand why you would say I'm not someone who's had historically high standards. I think you would say that because
every flat you've ever lived in has been garbage.
And you've been a personal victim of that when we lived together. But I don't think it's because I don't have standard. It's because every time I look for a new place, I have all of these ideas of what I want it to be. And then by the end of the process, I am battered and bruised and just happy to take a roof over my head. And it's frustrating. And like, I've always been attracted to like interesting houses, right? Like
you live in an attic.
That legitimately, like not even being silly, that's why I took the room. Because I was like, it's the interesting room in the house. And I think with a little more tender love and care, this attic wouldn't be as bad as I've let it get to. But I just do not give a shit enough about it that I just am letting it, I've let it go to the dogs. And I'm reaching that point now where it's like, I just took an Uber. I was nearly late. I was fretting about being late. I had to book and cancel like 5 Ubers in a row because it kept giving it to someone who was 10 minutes away, where they're usually like 2 to 3 minutes near my house. And I was just like, stop accepting it, Jake. Stop accepting this Uber ride from me. I'm begging you. Let someone closer to me get it. And so I finally got one. Got all the way out there, got there with like a minute to spare, just wandered in, looked around the place for 2 minutes, wandered out again, and was like, that wasn't really what I wanted, and then had to scoot home on a Lime scooter in the rain. And it's like, I essentially just played like fetch with my own body, right? I got in a car, slungshot my person to the other side of the city, and then went, all right, run back home now. Like, it's so frustrating. I nearly got hit by a car. Oh, man.
Wow.
But at least I'm not the last of my species or some shit.
Yeah. These we're here today to talk about the two Rio films. For context, if you're, for those listening to this, there was about 5 minutes of AJ talking about his flooding situation that I cut out of the start of this. but so this is Film Franchise Fortnights on the Cult Pop Podcast. We're talking about Rio, which came out in 2011, and Rio 2, which came out in 2014. Both directed by Carlos Saldana, who was the director of Ice Age 2 and 3, and Ferdinand, the Oscar-nominated film Ferdinand. And he also co-directed the original Ice Age and Robots.
Dude probably feels like he's a big player, you know?
A big player.
There's a lot of big IPs under his, but I don't know if any of these movies were received particularly well. But like,
Ferdinand was nominated for an Oscar, mate.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He probably thinks he's the fucking man. He gets to Rio and he's like, yeah, I will kill these. Like, yeah. I will, yeah.
What do you think Rio has on Rotten Tomatoes, if you're so certain of its lack of quality then?
I can't see the first Rio having it'll crack fresh, but I can't see it cracking like above mid-70s.
So give me a number then, AJ.
75.
72.
Hey.
Yeah. So yeah, these films were produced by Blue Sky Studios, which has shut down only a couple of years ago. It was founded actually all the way back in 1987. Interestingly, that like a lot of these things where it's like, oh, this animation company shut down, but it's like they've actually got like much longer histories than you realize.
Like Nintendo.
Yeah, which was founded in 1888. Or 89, yeah. I think. But
before video games.
Yeah, before videos.
Yeah, very true. Before Mario.
But yeah, it was created by a bunch of employees who were left behind after one of the studios that did the VFX for Tron shut down, called Magi. And they formed Blue Sky Studios as VFX. They did a lot of commercials and stuff, and then moved towards animation. And yeah, as I said, it was closed down by Disney in 2021 because it was part of the Fox acquisition. And it was just, they were like, we don't have the money anymore due to COVID, apparently, to run a third animation studio after just Disney Animation and Pixar. And Rio were the 6th and 9th films by the studio.
Interesting. All right. Well, RIP, Blue Sky Studios. I feel like a studio that didn't... Oh, no, it's more... Did they do... No, it's Illumination that gets a bunch of shit, eh? Mm. Blue Sky have some all right stuff.
Yeah, people... I like Blue Sky is like the little franchise that could... There's a lot of stuff. There's a really interesting thing about like a court case surrounding who owns the right to Scrat, the character from...
Yeah.
But we won't go into
that for when we...
do that for Ice Age.
Yeah. So and interestingly as well, that Blue Sky Studios is now a studio that is extinct, Richard, because not only is the plot of both Rio films basically about preserving the existence of a particular breed of macaw, but they failed in real life at preserving these. So both, as you so wittily and astutely and wryly.
I was going to say wryly, thank you.
You pointed out at the end of the last episode, both the subject and studio of this franchise are now no longer with us.
Although, that's a great segue, thank you, AJ, that I've done a bit more research in the last 2 weeks. 2 weeks and 3 days, because I have COVID and I was not up to recording for the last few days. So you are getting this episode a little bit late. Although if you're listening
That's
to this...
That's true. Sorry about that, everyone.
If you're listening to this beyond like this week, doesn't matter. Doesn't affect you. If you wouldn't have listened to it already anyway, it's fine. But the Spix's Macaw, which the main character of Rio is a Spix's Macaw, a very rare blue macaw, beautiful bird in real life if you look it up. I remember reading an article that was in 2019, it was declared extinct in the wild. There was still a few in captivity. But then after 20 years of conservation efforts, 200 macaws were bred from two parent birds, and in June of 2022, 52 individual birds were reintroduced into their natural habitat. So,
right,
very, very endangered, but and still preserved. They're still technically called extinct in the wild, because I guess these ones are all, even though they're in the natural habitat, they're still monitored very much. But it's good, like the idea, especially, you know, like such a cute animal like that going extinct makes me really sad. And like stories like that, they've managed to have, you know, breed 200 of them and release 52 into the wild, is like, it fills me with so much joy.
Oh, great. Well, I'm glad.
Makes me so happy.
Hopefully the same good fortune will befall the other blue thing that's gone extinct in the wake of this franchise. Oh my God. It wasn't the fault of these movies that Blue Sky Studios went down. Maybe some Blue Sky short films can be released into the wild.
we've sort of said generally there, but what is the film about, AJ?
Great question. And until I watched Rio 2, I was worried, because I was thinking all week, I was like, God, I don't think I've remembered less about a film we've covered in the podcast than Rio. And luckily, when I watched Rio 2, I was like, Oh, that's right.
It's about birds or some shit.
It's about birds. So it's about a Spix's Macaw who was like, being black marketed when he was a baby, like smuggled through the black market, but like got lost in the fray and was found by a little girl who raised him to be her companion. He's voiced by Jesse Eisenberg, but I think a distinction I want to point out now is that the humans are shown to only hear squawking.
Yeah, yeah.
But when we put on our bird ears, he's voiced by Jesse Eisenberg. At a time where it's like, Jesse Eisenberg feels like the kind of actor who wouldn't do something like this now. But at the time in 2011, hot off the heels of Zombieland, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, this would have, because Zombieland's also 2011, isn't it? Or is it Zombieland's 2010?
Surely this was after Zombieland.
Yeah, Zombieland's 2009, sorry, yeah. But the he recorded his dialogue for this in the weekends of shooting Social Network. And it was because he's like, you know, playing this nearly completely joyless piece of shit in Social Network, that to be able to, in the weekends, do, you know, this fun character for a voiceover. It's good, but like, because Jesse Eisenberg's an interesting person, because he seems like a bit of a prick in real life, to be honest. Like that interview where it's like, I think he thinks he's flirting, but clearly this woman went home and cried afterwards when she does the magic trick. But I saw an interview with him recently or read about it, but it was like, they asked about doing Now You See Me 3, and he was essentially like, I would only do those movies for the rest of my life if I could, because the character I play in them is so confident and cool, and to just to be able to embody that for as long as I'm on set, like, makes me a better person, you know?
Right. Interesting. Well,
because he seems like someone who's so like shut off, but I think he actually really likes doing characters like Blue.
Because I've edited the man recently, because he debuted a film he's in called Sasquatch Sunset, which sounds insane, yeah, yeah. by the way, over at Sundance.
And, it's him and what, like, Riley Keough?
Yeah, and yeah. they're dressed as, like, completely. Here Come the Hendersons yeah. style yeah. Sasquatch. Here yeah. Come the Hendersons.
Yeah, Harry and the Hendersons.
Harry and the Henderson style Sasquatch the whole time. And I guess, like, even though that's not, like, a humorless role, it's very, it feels, you know, it's a Sundance film. Yeah, anyway, so what's the character's, the character's fucking name is Blue, dipshit. He is raised as a companion for this woman named Linda, and then they find out when she's, like, 30 and he's probably the same 30, age as her. Yeah. they find out that he's an endangered Spix macaw, and it is thrust upon him that he must preserve the future of the species by mating with the last known Spix macaw named Jewel, played by Anne Hathaway. Another actor who is kind of like, I don't think they'd do this now. Like, both of these.
What's Anne Hathaway been in recently?
I don't know. She just seems like she's at a stage in her career where she wants to do, like, she's in Eileen, actually, with Thomas and Mackenzie, which, again, is another, like, festival.
It's actually a reunion for the two of them, because they played siblings in the short-lived sitcom Get Real from the creator of Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so then Jermaine Clement, who would absolutely still do something like this, plays Nigel, who's like an evil parrot. I can't remember. He just hates them.
He used to be like a beautiful bird, and he used to be an actor. And then he couldn't anymore. He got fat or something. And then, so now he detests beautiful birds.
Right. It's a musical, but it only has like three songs across. Yeah. It feels like it's got like 3.5 songs across two movies.
Interestingly, Joe, this is the fifth computer animated musical film. I'll give you four of them, but so after The Polar Express, Happy Feet, and Tangled, but can you tell me what the first computer animated musical film was?
Is it like a trick question? Is it something like Fantasia, where technically computer animation?
No, it's very much that 3D animated style.
That's a good question. Can you give me a studio? Give me a studio and I'll genuinely try.
The studio would give it away.
The studio would give it away? Is it like Aardman?
No, I would have to Google what the studio is, but I can tell you it would give it away.
All right, can you give me a year it came out?
2002.
2002. I'm so bad at this. Why don't you get me to guess? Like, the answers are never like that. Like, sometimes we get me to guess numbers on this show.
Yeah.
You'll be like, what do you think this is? And I'll just guess for like 20 minutes. And the answer's like 40. And it's like, wow, cool. great that AJ couldn't guess that.
Well, okay. I can give you the studio. Which, yeah. If you know it, you'll know it. It's produced by Big Idea Productions.
Oh my god, is it Jonah, a VeggieTales movie?
It is Jonah, a VeggieTales movie. computer animated musical.
And first organic bringing up of VeggieTales by you on the podcast. Do you know, not only have I seen that film, I saw that film a lot. I think it was a Christmas present, and there is a song in it by the Newsboys, who I've talked about before, who were very big in the
God's Not Dead
mum rock scene. God's Not Dead people, yep. And they had a song in it about that like played over the credits, and it was like, when I was 8, this was my favorite song. it was called Belly of the Whale, because it's about Jonah, who this version is played by an asparagus, and the chorus was like, I think you would actually not hate it if you.
Well, I quite like The Pirates Who Don't Do Anything. I like Reliant K's cover of it.
Yeah, there you go. So the chorus of Belly of the Whale goes, I'm sleeping with fishes here in the belly of the whale. I'm highly nutritious here in the belly of the whale. Like, it's not like unpleasant. It's not actually like an unpleasant, like, of the era kind of like pop song. Great. No, that's awesome. I bet they touted that when it came out, because the VeggieTales essentially, we should do an episode about VeggieTales someday, but VeggieTales essentially got coaxed into, like, putting all their chips in one basket. What am I saying? That by, like, an entrepreneur who was like, move to nowhere New Zealand, you will be the next Disney. Start a studio, you will be the next Disney. And they did this, and it like bankrupted them, basically.
I mean, they only have two films to theatrically release.
It qualifies.
Yeah.
It qualifies.
Jonah and the Pirates Who Don't Do Anything.
I've seen both. And Pirates Who Don't Do Anything is interesting because it was a mainstream release, so they had to scrub any religious references from it, which until their Netflix shows was like all VeggieTales was religious references. And so there's like a king in the Pirates Who Don't Do Anything who's like a noble, loving king, and they all want to like to do right by the king. Yeah.
Anyway, there's a Larry Boy film coming out in 2026, apparently, just announced in January.
That's been rumored literally for 20 years. That's not coming out. Do you know that one of my coworkers at Letterboxd actually messaged me a couple of months back and was like, hey man, I'm just figuring out what should and shouldn't be listed on Letterboxd.
Yeah, yeah.
Under VeggieTales, and notice I'd logged some of them or mentioned some of them somewhere, and so I actually had to do like legitimate busy work for Letterboxd to go through the list of like, because like a lot of VeggieTales releases are like compilations of old episodes and stuff, so I had to be like, this is a compilation, this is a movie, like this is a wraparound segment that has old episodes in it.
yeah.
Anyway,
the birds get captured and then they escape. And the ending of the film, which lead us into the second film eventually, is that, well, Blue learns to fly. He wasn't able to fly throughout it because he's been in captivity. But his owner falls in love in Rio as well. And in the film set in Rio de Janeiro. And they both go to live in the in the jungle, and Rio lives in his natural lives in his natural habitat.
His name's not Rio, idiot.
No, the character should be called Rio.
The character. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about titles for a second.
Yeah,
I think, like a lot of the way I feel about this film, Rio as a title, supremely unappealing. And the first thing you're about to say, if I don't cut you off, is, well, what do you think it should be called? Blue the fucking parrot? And no, I
Blue,
don't have a...
Blue the fucking parrot.
Well, kind of, actually, that's what the movie's about. I don't necessarily have an alternative. I just think it is such a lazy title for the movie that, like when you've got movies that are called, like, Ron Gone Wrong, or, you know, like
Spies in Disguise.
Flushed Away. Like, these are...
These are titles.
These are titles that work on children. Mm. I am surprised Rio got a sequel, because everything about it seems so unconcerned with its target demographic. It has a boring title that no one would want to see. The animation itself, like, it's, like, up to scratch for the time, but, like, none of the character does... It's like a sanitized Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Mm. Look to it. I think, like, the way that the characters, because they're parrots, have to, like, how they look face on is very just not very cute. Like, they're all right in profile, but it's like birds are very hard. Like, they look from side to side, but these guys have got to look forward, right? And like everything, like, the story is so uninteresting, and also, like, it's about sex, I guess, ultimately.
It's a very sexual film.
It's a very sexual film. They're
rated
not
G,
only
though.
Because
it was originally rated PG, but it was lowered.
Wow. Not only because of the parrot sex, but, like, the human love story between Linda and the conservationist, who I thought was going to be the bad guy.
Yeah, same.
When he first showed up. Thought he was going to steal Blue, you know? She ends up in, like, a
sexy parrot outfit.
Yeah, well, it's because it's like they're at a Rio
Carnival, because it's a film set in Rio, so it has to be during Carnival.
But like, you don't have to, in your kids' movie, animate your female character in
that,
like,
fuckable.
Well, I was going to say a scantily clad outfit. But whatever, who gives a shit?
Well,
kids should be exposed to sex at a younger age. Why not? What do I know? I'm not like I'm not an expert on this shit. I don't know what's the right thing or the wrong thing. I'm just talking about things that flared the chemicals in my brain when I saw them, and I went, I'll talk about this on the podcast.
I actually really liked the character of Linda, though. I think it's probably the most...
I thought she was actually pretty sexy.
I think it's the most likable character Leslie Mann has ever played. Someone who's who's known for playing... unlikable characters, and mostly in films created by her husband, weirdly. But the whole film, I was like, because that's the appropriate message you should have, is that like the conservationist message, and like blue should live in the natural habitat, yada yada. But I was like, I'm actually just going to be so upset that because they blue and Linda have such a beautiful relationship, and they like, we're never shown anything wrong with that other than what we just know of, like keeping animals as pets, and especially, you know, exotic birds. But I was like, so the ending that we got is kind of all right, but it's like, I wish they were still closer, because their relationship was the heart of the film for me.
And when a film as dull as this has a heart, you're like, oh my God, it's warm by the fire.
I didn't mind this film. I thought, as far as kids' movies go, this is a pretty fun. I would be quite happy to put my kids, if they ever exist one day, in front of this. But also, like I sort of said earlier, that like a film like, because something like Finding Nemo, which has you know, similar animals, especially the second one, which sucked, but like has that conservationist message and like, you know, protecting these species. But like Finding Nemo resulted in a bunch of people unprepared to look after exotic fish buying clownfish because, oh look, it's from the movie, and they, you know, ended up dying. But the I like that a film like Rio exists, and that, you know, probably single-handedly led to the like interest in these birds and money going towards it, and the reason that we still have some, like very few of them, but alive today. And
you reckon Rio is responsible for, like, in a reverse Jaws situation?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that Rio, put, like, because even just that, like, you know, when Spix's morcor went extinct in the wild in 2019. That got shared around so much more, and there would have been a lot more people that it's like, oh, it's extinct in the wild, but there's this thing that you can do. Because, you know, even if you're not necessarily like, oh, I'm going to save Blue and his friends, it's like that headline has a reason to grab your attention slightly more, and people that would have, you know, that are already interested in keeping these things alive are more likely to see it. And
Do you know what I reckon would be changed if this film was made now?
Probably be a different bird.
Be a different bird, no. I think, like, Jesse Eisenberg as a voice actor is not, like, particularly mind-blowing in his abilities. Like, it's a pretty, like, standard Jesse
Celebrity
Eisenberg character.
Yeah. It was originally supposed to be Neil Patrick Harris, but he had Shijin conflicts.
Right. Jesse Eisenberg, surely a bigger get then. But Neil Patrick Harris, I would argue, probably a better voice actor.
Yeah, he played Steve the Monkey in Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
There you go.
Steve!
But one thing that I think that was like, oh, this wouldn't happen today, is like, surely you cast Brazilian voice actors as all the Brazilian birds, right? Anne Hathaway plays the like Brazilian parrot. Like it's one of these things where it's like, it's I don't know, like it feels weird to be like, famously white woman Anne Hathaway is playing a nearly extinct Brazilian bird. The rounding out the voice cast as well, we mentioned Jemaine Clement and Leslie Mann. George Lopez shows up. Jamie Foxx is also there. We've also got...
Who's like a duo with Will.i.am.
Yep. Yeah, true. We've also got Tracy Morgan. And then, yeah, just sort of descends into a bunch of names I don't recognize. Jane Lynch and Wanda Sykes play Canadian Goose. They have, like, I feel like, four lines in the whole thing. Yeah. I don't know. I just found this really boring and uninteresting, to be honest. Wow. I agree it's not, like, notably bad, but, like, this is just, to me, one of the most forgettable films before. I mean, literally, I forgot it between the first and second film.
Well, AJ, yeah. I do have some randomly placed useless statistics for you.
Please.
Or just one. This is our second franchise to feature a contribution from one half of Flight of the Conchords in a 2011 film, who then contributed the same way for the 2014 sequel.
Ah, so Brett McKenzie and the Muppets. And yeah. Muppets Most Wanted.
Yeah. Interesting. Also, interestingly, this film lost its only Oscar nomination to... I actually don't know if it was only... It might have been nominated for Best Animated Picture. It lost an Oscar to Muppets to Brett McKenzie for Man or Muppet. And I mentioned this last episode, I think, but randomly there was only two songs nominated. And I haven't actually gone to the bottom of why that was, but only ones that made some sort of threshold.
The other song nominated was from Rio.
Yeah, Real in Rio.
So this feels underreported that the Oscar race between best song that year was between the two members of Flight of the Conchords.
Well, it's not a song by Jermaine.
Imagine, it's pretty close though. Like, he sings in the film.
Yeah.
How they talked about this to each other. I wonder if Jermaine hoped Brett would win, deservedly win, right? Or if Jermaine was kind of hoping the film he represented would be the one to beat, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, would you rather hope that, like, I would win an Oscar, or that, like, Letterboxd would win an Oscar?
That's the question, exactly, because it's about...
What would you hope?
If I would hope that you would win an Oscar for the, like, if you had done if you specifically...
So I'm winning Best Director, Letterboxd, as a studio, produce Best Picture.
Yeah.
What would you rather happen?
I'd prefer your success, you need it more.
Rio didn't need the success.
Yeah,
Brett
exactly,
needed
exactly.
it. there was also we don't have this anymore, but on our cult elders we used to do
the Blue Spicks McCall or West Coast
Junior. the cult elders episodes we used to do. Our patron Vincent would play video games based on films, allegedly this sounds, it's one of these things that, like, sounds wrong, but I don't know enough to refute it, but the Angry Birds Rio, which was a version of Angry Birds based on Rio, marked the first time that an existing game was specifically adapted to accommodate the release of a film.
That's not true.
Like, what?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Surely that's not true. That feels like that happens all the time.
Yeah, maybe just in the last 13 years.
Yeah, maybe. Holy shit. So you're telling me, like, Star Wars Angry Birds was after Rio Angry Birds?
It probably would have been, yeah. And also, that wouldn't have been because of the release of Star Wars as well.
It might have been. There was a.
Well, it would have been after 2011.
Not before it.
Dumbass. Anyway, speaking of calling you a dumbass, I do have some dumb IMDb trivia.
Yes, please.
It's a great crop. Like, kids' films where they're clearly written by children. So good. like, this first one. No context for this, AJ, but according to IMDb, this was released the same year as Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules, 2011.
Wow, the only other film that came out.
So in The Dark Knight Rises, 2012, when Bruce discovers that Selina Kyle stole his fingerprints in one of the newspapers that narrates a robbery of Selina, he can read the word Jewel, which is a reference to this movie because Anne Hathaway made the voice of Jewel in this movie.
Now, see, this is an interesting thing, like a slightly interesting, what I actually would classify as trivia, hidden behind a misrepresentation of the information, right? Because it is, I guess, interesting that she played a character named Jewel and then played a jewel thief,
I guess would be the more interesting way to put it.
For sure. Like, that is, I guess, a piece of trivia. But this trivia seems to be implying this is intentional.
Yeah.
And I don't think Christopher Nolan has seen or heard of this movie, let alone planted a wry reference to it.
To refute that with one of the other pieces of evidence, we do know that he has seen or at least has heard of Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Roderick Rules. Because he referenced
true.
It in an interview.
And cast Roderick in Oppenheimer
because he thought
everyone's making a big deal out of it. He's in it for like 4 seconds as well.
Yeah, he thought Roderick ruled so hard he cast him.
And he was right to do so.
Yeah. This is George Lopez's second movie where there are blue characters after Smurfs. Now, a couple of things to break down for you here. One, the movie's not called Smurfs. Two, this movie came out before the Smurfs.
Three, George Lopez was an avatar.
lastly, this movie has several elements similar to Happy Feet. Both feature singing and dancing birds, have some rude humor early, and end with male and female characters' offspring visible.
Okay, so loads of animated movies end with the offspring showing up. Yeah. Shrek is one example I can think of. But what was the second one?
Features rude humor early.
Rude humor early?
Yeah.
Like earlier on in the film, it's rude?
Well, just early in the timeline of lewd humor. Also, it's interesting that the film was first thought of in 2005. The director read the story, had this idea about a penguin washing up on the beaches of Ipanema, but changed it after he learned of both Happy Feet and Surf's Up being produced around that time.
Well, Surf's Up's the other one. Like, this joins a pantheon of, like, to me, very similar bird movies, like Happy Feet and Surf's Up, you know? Like, these kids' movies that all came out just as I was growing out of them, or well and truly grown out of, like, the kind of movie, and now they feel like you remember the movie The Wild, that was like the unfortunately timed Madagascar, like,
oh, vaguely, yeah.
Pepsi Madagascar, like that's the kind of, like, tone I feel watching Rio.
So one interesting thing that you mentioned this last episode, but one interesting thing about the legacy of this film is that this somewhat, arguably, cancelled a Pixar film. So interesting, you know,
it
Pixar
brought up old tweets.
Yeah, Pixar known for being, like, you know, top of the game, and, like, you know, you read reviews of Rio and Rio 2 and they all go, well, it's not as good as Pixar. But there was this film announced in April of 2008 called Newt, and I remember following the development of this. I remember what looks like, and
yeah.
There's
loads of concept art for it.
Yeah. And I can give you the official synopsis that was released, which says,
please,
what happens when the last remaining male and female blue-footed newts on the planet are forced together by science to save the species? and they can't stand each other. That's the problem facing Newt and Brooke, heroes of Newt, the Pixar film by seven-time Academy Award winner for sound Gary Rydstrom and director of Pixar's Oscar-nominated short Lifted. Newt and Brooke embark on a perilous, unpredictable adventure and discover that finding a mate never goes as planned, even when you only have one choice. Love, as it turns out, is not a science.
Yeah, interesting. So, firstly, stupid to name just one of them Newt, I reckon. It's very distracting when you're trying to...
Well, I had to, like, Blue's describe. Name should have been Rio, and then it's set in Rio, and his name's Rio.
I can imagine the idea of, like... Because, like, putting the last two surviving members of a species together
and
to,
forcing
to
them to fuck, it's kinky.
Like, it's sexy. No, like, I can see that the story opportunities appearing for a lot of people,
a lot
of creatives. Like,
parallel
thinking, especially when you get into, like, and what if they can't stand each other, which the Rio movies kind of, like...
does that.
Yeah. The Rio movies kind of don't lean too much into the hate each other.
It's more like they're just... not really compatible to begin with.
Yeah. I don't think you could make her happy, but what choice does she have?
Yeah, but fuck God, what woman can be, God.
But I will say that Newt, with Pixar behind it and what I've seen of the art and all that, seems just way more appealing to me. Than
probably would have been a better film, but might not have saved a real species, so... Who knows? But
what's
the
more important?
Interestingly, John Lasseter pointed out that it was similar to another film, and Pixar president Edwin Catmull just said that Newt was just not working in pre-production, apparently, and the project was passed on to Pete Docter, who the director of Monsters Inc. had up, and he was like, "Well, what if we did this instead?" And that idea was Inside Out, so.
What if instead of a blue-footed Newt, it was a little girl, and instead of having to find the last of their species, she had anthropomorphic emotions?
So, that's Rio 1. Following on from that was Rio 2 in 2014, again directed by Carla Saldana. And what does this one have on Rotty Tees?
32?
Guess. Go on, guess.
32?
No, AJ, guess properly.
15.
Okay, now 48. So, bit of a drop off. Most of the reviews, say that it's, not as good as Pixar, etc. But what's it about, AJ?
This time, it turns out, don't worry, everyone, there's actually loads
there's
of
them. There's a fuckload of them. Yeah.
They just live in
the I feel like I looked away and then I looked up. And there was 1,000 Spixes McCaws. And I was like, where did these guys come from?
It's the effects of the first movie, dude. Yeah. And so Rio and his wife and kids go to the Amazon in order to meet with them. It turns out the first one they meet is Jules' dad, and it becomes a meet the parents sort of story while the Amazon is being destroyed by evil contractors. And also Nigel's back, and now there's a poisonous frog who's in love with him.
And is it actually poisonous? Actually, spoilers.
Really? Is that what happens? I've dropped off cognitively by the point of that reveal, I think.
Wow. Yeah, so...
I did find her character interesting. And Kristen Chenoweth. She's voiced by Kristen Chenoweth, who... I like more than I like.
Than you
lot
dislike.
Of the
but
actors.
The.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the film ends with a very Shakespearean sort of thing that they're. Nigel wants to kill Blue with a poison tipped dart using the poison from her, and it ends up striking him instead. And then he's like, oh, woe is me. I am dying. And she is like. Which is straight out of Hamlet, but the and then straight out of Romeo and Juliet, she's like, "Well, if you've died, I can't live without you." So she takes a drop from her back and drinks it, and then one of Blue's kids are like, "She's not poisonous," and then she's like, "What? I'm not." And Nigel's like, "Huh?" and turns out that there's like that she gives the actual name of which I've since forgotten, but there's a certain type of tree frog that just looks poisonous.
Nice. But that's how you come up. You find out about that frog first, and then you go, "Oh, this could be a part of Rio 2."
Busting down the doors at Blue Sky Studio, be like, "I've got a plot for Rio 2."
The best, Jermaine Clement as Nigel is the best part of this franchise, I think, broadly, but specifically this movie. I did not enjoy the part where he's trying to infiltrate the Spix's Macaw like community and is wearing like a mask to leave so that they don't notice him, and accidentally crashes a talent show audition where he gets so praised for his performance that like his new priority becomes killing at the talent show instead.
Doing really well.
Yeah, doing really well. I thought that was kind of
killing was his goal up until that point.
That's true. That's true. Very confusing. He sings a fun "I Will Survive" remix, which made me think a lot about Jermaine Clement as a presence. And like, do you reckon like how famous is Jermaine Clement? Because he gets a lot of like roles that I would like, because he played Bordis in Men in Black 3.
He gets a lot of roles that I think I should get.
Not that I think I should get. A lot of roles that, like, would make sense to give to someone who I would think is a bit more well-known.
I think Boris is a bit of an outlier.
But then what about Nigel?
Well, I think animated is different because it's like, you know, in Moana as well. Although Moana has the, like, sort of New Zealand Pacific connection.
Moana's got an excuse, yeah.
But, I think that, I mean, this is also Rio being a year after, or the same year as Men in Black, that it's like, or the year behind. When did Men in Black 3 come out? Was it 2011, 2012?
2013.
Yeah, be 3.
Came out in between them.
12. But that it's like, I think this was just the height of his fame and marketability. And I think that, the Rio and Boris from Men in Black 3 are two sides of the same coin in terms of
roles. Is it the same thing as Bob Odenkirk being in Incredibles 2? Like, was Flight of the Conchords as enough of a presence that it was that thing where it's like, person who's doing really well on HBO at the moment.
It's interesting, like, you go through any Pixar movie and you can tell what the biggest things on TV were at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I mean, you even going back to the first Toy Story, it's Home Improvement. Mm. And then, I mean, even like Lion King, you got Home Improvement as well. And I mean, even the ones I remember noticing.
Are you just listing Home Improvement examples? I mean, Home Improvement can be found all over the place.
But like, they've said this. And like, I mean, Alan and Dory. But like, they've said this and their things, because it's like, it's whatever's on TV in the Pixar offices, and those are the voices you start hearing all day. Right, and you go, they would work with this character, actually. But yeah, I remember in Finding Dory that there's like two extra characters who are voiced by Ty Burrell from Modern Family and Caitlin Olsen. D from Always Sunny, and it's like, just two, you know, would be someone's favorite TV show in whenever that, 2018 or whenever that film came out. This was Janelle Monáe's first film, funnily.
She's the main character in
Glass Onion. She's also her second film was Moonlight. Which is funny that it's like, I bet she wishes that was her first film. Because she also did like Hidden Figures. She's got a great filmography, like Hidden Figures and things like that. But Rio 2 was her first film. I thought this film was pretty weak in comparison. It's funny, Jules' dad is voiced by Andy Garcia. And, you know, they sort of has the, like, how you were saying, you know, you should get Latin performers. But, like, his performance in this is, like, could you not get J.K. Simmons? That guy does anything. Like, it feels to me like you wanted J.K. Simmons, but he was too busy being the yellow M&M or something.
Taking over from John Goodman.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. My main experience with this film was, firstly, I watched this in four parts.
Wow.
Which horrible movie to watch in four parts.
Mm. I was going to watch it in two parts, but I was like, oh, I'll just power through. I'm just going to have to watch the second half at some point.
But like, I did think at one point, I was like, this is very Avatar, like blue creatures
blue shirt.
Accepting an outsider into their jungle home while like their jungle home is being threatened by someone who this outsider vaguely represents or whatever.
Mm.
And I was like, I'm gonna write like a killer Letterboxd review that's gonna acknowledge this. And then I went, wait, Google Rio 2 Avatar first. And Richard, I'm glad I did, because I am not, I am by a wide margin not the first person to make that observation. Right. So,
interesting.
Yeah,
I feel like
Avatar 2. It's Avatar.
Yeah, it's Rio 2, The Way of Water.
Well, it's technically it is more. I think
I wanted to give our fan
world,
art maker Rivix, who makes funny. And if you haven't seen them, check them out. Go ahead, head along to our Discord because they're incredible.
Go online and check it out.
I think give an alternate title for a film, Rivix makes a poster for it. And I was just thinking, we haven't done one for this episode. So I threw out Rio 2, The Way of Water. I was also going to, when you said, it's this film, our jungle home is being invaded. I was going to say they should have called the film, Our Jungle Home is Being Invaded.
That's a lot of letters for Rivix to like ape the font of a three-letter title.
Yeah.
I think that in a perfect content world, and this is one of these franchises which, behind the scenes, everyone, Richard and I are like, whoo! Let's talk about VeggieTales and my flatting situation for 15 minutes at one point because there's not a lot to talk about. This is, in a perfect world, this film would be more like Avatar 2 than Avatar 1, because then you could be like, it beat Avatar by however many, 9 years or whatever, but it's not. It's more like Avatar 1. I can't even have that fun observation.
This was also, it's funny because I was going to compare it to another film. I was going to make a little meme or something like that. The film it reminded me of was Early Man.
Okay.
The Aardman film. Where it's, because have you seen Early Man?
No.
Because it's like a film where it has this cool premise, this interesting, setup. And then like an hour into the film, you're like, is this film just about football? And yeah, it is. Like Early Man is a football film. It's about it's about soccer. It just happens to be set in the Stone Age. And yeah, Rio 2, there's like a massive part of it that's just about a football game. And I was like, am I getting Early Manned? I got Leslie manned in the first one.
When this film started, I was like, God, none of the cast will have returned. Who downgraded voice cast will this movie sport? And none of them. They're all back. They're all the exact same. They all returned. Even George Lopez, who was probably a fairly easy get for the first film. One thing I thought was interesting, though, is Anne Hathaway is billed above Jesse Eisenberg, at least in the closing credits, which was like, yeah, she probably did like surpass him. Sequels.
Is it a like one is higher but one's to the left sort of situation?
You'll have to rewatch the credit sequence.
Not going
to
do that.
That's
often how they get around it. That like one will be on the left, and then the second one will be higher. Right. And because Towering Inferno, I think, was a film that famously settled a dispute by doing that.
Right. Knowing that that happens in the closing credits is the only proof my memory has that I actually finished this film. That I didn't get four sessions in and then just
the incredible reveal of the non-poison Kristen Chenoweth.
I remember the dart hitting Nigel, but then it's all a blur after that.
Wow. I do have a couple of pieces of dumb IMDb trivia for this.
Please.
I will read them out in the order that they are presented on IMDb. The movie predicted that in the 2018 World Cup scores round of 16 with Argentina and France scores 4-3. And below that, the movie predicted that in the 2018 World Cup scores round of
Someone's having some trouble.
Mm. Just finishes there.
But
I'm not the one having trouble, for the record.
Surely for something, like whenever people say like The Simpsons predicted the future, I feel like it only really counts if like what it's depicting is in the future in the like fictional context of the show, right? Like if The Simpsons like the future set episodes predicting this or that are more interesting to me than just this actor was in this thing. Yeah. Whereas like this Rio 2's not set in 2018. So if this sport game, whatever it's for, if it does play out the same way as the 2018 game, I don't, it's, that's nothing.
Well, it also doesn't say that it accurately predicted it.
Right. That's even more confounding then.
Yeah. So that is the Rio franchise as it currently stands. Now, you would think that Blue Sky Studios having been shut down would mean that is the end for our dear little Spix's Macaws. But much like the real life Spix's Macaw, there is hope yet. There is a third film in development at Disney. As of a year or two ago. And in 2019, when the first sort of the Fox merger went through and the first big slate of like, these are all the things we're working on, they announced that a spin-off based on Nico and Pedro was in the works at Disney Plus. There hasn't been a single word about it since like August 2019, but those are Will.i.am and Jamie Foxx's characters for those playing along at home. Now, of course, as is the tradition of the podcast, we do have to pitch our own continuations of the franchise. And AJ, I would love to hear what you have prepared.
Well, I think it should just represent what actually happened to the Spix's Macaw in between this and the third film, right? But here's the kicker, because when I watched these, I was like, so all these guys are fucking dead now?
Yeah.
And I was like, what it should be, what Rio 3 should be, is the story of the extinction, the gradual extinction of the Spix's Macaw at the hands, or should I say the claws, of none other than Nigel.
Wow.
I think Nigel should kill even the babies. Even the
babies, especially
the little
babies.
Kids. Their little children, Macaws, should kill them too.
Mm.
The third one should be about him succeeding in what he wants and the havoc it causes on the ecosystem.
I had a similar thing about like reflecting reality. And when I was watching the films, I thought that they, you know, were extinct. And I was like, should have this really dark message about environmentalism, and that it's like, you know, if you... It's almost too late to act. But now I think that you could still have that message and a happy ending. But I think that we should have a much darker Rio 3, which really sends that message home. I do want to, now that we're this deep into the podcast, I do want to ask you a question, AJ. Something that I found out about myself watching Rio 2. And that is, AJ, how do birds mate?
They have cloacas.
Explain this to me.
Do you, as in you don't know, or you want me to?
I'm saying I didn't really know until yesterday.
So most birds don't have like genitals. They have a little sort of like orifice that shits and pisses and comes all in one factory.
Yeah.
And that is called a cloaca. And the way that it's not just birds, a lot of fish, a lot of bugs, I think, have cloacas. And the way that this works is often they'll do what our good friends over at Two in the Think Tank, a podcast obsessed with the concept of cloacas. they'll do what they call a cloacal kiss, where they will rub their cloacas together and fertilize the eggs, is it still called an egg when they also lay the egg? It would still be an egg.
Yeah, well, it's the same as in a human or a mammal. But yeah, that it's like the laying of the egg is equivalent to like ovulation in a mammal. But I think that it's, yeah, they don't, only chickens and a couple other birds like lay them if they're unfertilized. But yeah, it wasn't until last night that I was like, you know what? I actually know very little about the reproductive. I knew about cloacas and I knew about obviously laying eggs, but I just like didn't know a lot of the in between.
Let's have that in the out of context Richard and AJ quotes. Have you heard of like swans have like gigantic
yeah yeah
dicks,
and, the, and like, ducks not, have corkscrew penises.
Yeah, it's not all cloacas for every bird, but it is very common. Mm,
cloacas for every bird should have been the title of Rio 2.
And we are unfortunately not treated to a cloacal kiss scene in either of these movies.
We do get close to it. There's a weird pegging scene.
Is there?
Well, there's an implied pegging scene.
The best kind. that's one thing. That's one other thing I'd want in Rio 3 would be a cloacal kiss scene.
Mm. Rio 3, cloacal nice. Kiss.
Alrighty, well, now we've got to get to what everybody's probably tuned in to listen to.
Ranked at franchise.
Ranked at franchise first. I've completely forgotten. We didn't rank Speed.
Yeah,
because we're keeping it secret. So let's put that on there.
Speed. Number 94. Alright, AJ, so where do you think Rio goes? Is it good or is it bad?
I think it's probably a net positive overall.
That's the thing. Like, I think it's
as begrudged as I am to admit it.
It feels too mean to say it's bad.
Yeah, it's not bad enough to be below the Nymphomaniac constant.
Yeah. Is it better than An American Tale?
No.
Is it better than Predator?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. It's number 91 then.
There we go, everyone. And now for the reason everyone is tuned in to this episode.
They're gonna re-rank Debt Franchise.
We're going to go over to our Patreon where people, in what looks to be one of the most heated next franchise votes. This is how we do it. If you're new to the show, we every second franchise is chosen by a violent poll that goes up on our Patreon where people like legitimately destroy their friendships over advocating for which franchise should be covered on the next episode. The last I heard, it was like a 7-way tie or some shit. So let's go and see.
I do,
Richard,
have an update for you, AJ.
Yep.
It is currently still a 7-way tie.
All right, so what are these seven?
So we have Blade Runner.
Okay.
2001 and 2010, A Space Odyssey. Crank. Mm-hmm. American Psycho. Weekend at Bernie's. Agent Cody Banks. And a great Indian-Canadian comedy, FUBAR.
Yeah, FUBAR's been climbing up there despite, like, I don't think I've ever even heard of those.
I am just finding out now that it's, or like, I just found out a few days ago that it's not, because they're like, oh, it's got this distant sequel that's, like, better than the first. And I was like, oh, I know the distant sequel has Arnold Schwarzenegger in it. But no, that was a TV show he was on.
Right. This feels like Canadian Boondock Saints.
Or Canadian Clerks or something.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what the hell do we do? A 7-way tie. Shall I go on the Patreon right now and be like, I'll do it. Okay, I'm going to say right now on the Patreon section on the Discord, we are ready to select the next franchise. You have a minute starting now to put one in the lead. Okay, while that's happening, Richard, I will just let the people know that if you enjoyed this episode, if you enjoyed this podcast, then please do consider joining our various social networks. Jesse Eisenberg. What? You can jump in our Discord. That's where you can talk to us directly. Please jump in the Discord because I want to know what you think. I want to know what you think. Is that so wrong? Am I so wrong?
What's your favorite angry bird?
Yeah, and you can also go to, you know, we're on all Instagram, Twitter, all that bullshit that I feel like the ship has sailed on half a dozen of them, but you can go to us over there, and you can also support us over at patreon.com/cultpopture, where you can do things like put us in this weird stalemate that's never, like, an unprecedented stalemate for a podcast. But yeah, thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned for the post-credits scene.
We're at the end of which we'll reveal the next franchise.
At the end of the post-credits scene?
Yeah, fuck you. You gotta listen to the whole thing.
All right, well, let's do it. Thank you for listening, everybody. Come to Brazil. Welcome along to the post-credit scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode, what's usually at the end of each episode, where we, if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/cultpopshire, you get to give us something to talk about, and this is the post-credit scene. And Richard, and what I'm sure will be the most skipped over post-credit scene we've ever done, what is the post-credit scene this week?
Today's post-credit scene comes to us from Jake, who says, Richard, how's wedding planning going? AJ, how did your friend enjoy the MDMA?
What a compelling one to be the most skipped one ever, right?
For my answer, we haven't started wedding planning a lot yet. We went to a wedding a few weeks ago, which, you know, sort of being around a wedding makes you be like, oh, would we want this? Would we want that? And, you know, makes you talk about. But beyond just discussions that we haven't really looked into much, Jess has worked as a producer on Married at First Sight and seasons of that, so she's been cultivating contacts for us.
We need to cultivate wedding power. How did my friend enjoy the MDMA? Look, I don't want to reveal too much about my friend's life, but it legitimately not the drug itself, but the results of doing the drug set his life in a new direction that I think in a lot of good and bad ways, a lot of good ways, a lot of bad ways. They got very depressed the next couple of days, debilitatingly so, as is the danger with MDMA, and they're a little scared to ever dabble again. But a lot of crazy shit happened that night my friend is still like psychologically unpacking.
Wow.
In new and interesting ways. Richard, that's the show. See you next time, everybody. I'm kidding. What is it, Richard? What's won the poll?
We're going to be covering FUBAR next time.
I genuinely can't remember a time on the podcast's entire life that I've been less aware of a franchise than this. Maybe Fright Night I was pretty unaware of. Mm. But this is like, haven't even heard of these. But that's us next week, everybody. It's Fright Night. We'll see you then. I mean, FUBAR.